What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
Prevention of crime. Every hour of the day and night.
Movie.
Break.
Is the team that protects your property and you.
Bretton, could you tell me what makes Mia a perfect match for a scary character? And Mia, could you tell us when you first noticed that you might scare other people? Because all of the most of the movies I saw you in are really scary.
Do you want?
Like, you go first.
What makes Mia? I think it's just that Mia is a perfect actress, and so it can be any character, whether it's a scary character or a non-scary character. I think if you're very good at acting, you can do anything.
I'm really not trying to pick. You know, it's not at the front of my mind when I'm picking projects. It's like, oh, I want to be in a horror movie, or is that I want to be in a like psychological thriller type of film. It's really. I'm very director driven, and that for me is probably the most important component when I'm picking projects is having you know, complete trust in the director that I'm possibly going to work with, and with Brandon I had that in spades. I'd seen Antiviral, I'd seen Possessor, and I was a fan of his work, and I knew that he had a really unique vision of the world, and that he was going to create something really special, and so that coupled with the role that was presented to me as I was reading, it just so happened that existed in this realm. But really, I would have done like a buddy road trip movie with Brandon had it you know, that had been on the page. But
films with class satire seem to be everywhere at the moment. You have The Menu and Triangle of Sadness, and I wondered, why did you want to work with that subject?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because film moves at such an incredibly slow pace that I didn't realize that all these films were going to come out at the same time. I started working on this as a short story originally back in 2014 or maybe earlier. So the economic divide, maybe because it's so particularly pronounced right now, and because especially coming out of the pandemic, and I think it could be that people are more hooked into this kind of satire because everyone's so anxious and frustrated. But again, it's such a long process getting a film made that there was no way to predict the mood of 2023 or to know that.
But in 2024, why were you attracted to this subject?
I originally started writing it as a short story that was just the first execution in the film, and the idea of someone watching an exact likeness of himself being executed and being able to get away with it. And so I guess it initially started as an exploration of identity and punishment and how freedom from consequence shapes people and causes their psychology to mutate. And so I think that was the core of it, but the class satire plays into that theme very easily, because of course if you have more money it's easier to get away with things.
But it definitely has these like ethical and physical philosophical aspects, you know, in addition to this social commentary in a way. So I want to ask you, what sort of was your main attraction to the project, and yeah, and for you, kind of, what was the most important aspect of all these different layers?
Well, what appealed to me most about this project, I mean, after, you know, Brandon being the one writing and directing this, was my character Gabby and everything that she goes through. You know, she starts off as this rather sweet and assuming woman, and by the end of the movie, she's a much more primal, incredibly feral, wild, unhinged character. And then she kind of exists and also everything in between. So really, it was just such a gift to be able to play so many different colors, so many different notes of a character in one movie. I mean, it's just so rare to come across characters like that. And so I jumped at the opportunity, and I knew how fortunate I was. And yeah, I was just really excited by the idea of Gabby.
Yeah.
The main character discovers the power that money can give him. He has married into money and suddenly realizes that it makes him literally untouchable. And it intoxicates him, this kind of power. Is that also something that you know yourself as someone who's financially very privileged?
Power. I don't feel like I have a huge amount of power, but maybe I don't know how to answer that question. I think it's one aspect of his character's development, but it's not just that. I think it's, you know, he's also this kind of self-loathing character who is blind to his own limitations. I'm not a stand-in for James, or James isn't a stand-in for me, but part of it was a kind of self-mockery, honestly, that had more to do with the fact that I was in an 8-year gap between my first and second films, and I was sort of spinning my wheels and having a lot of traditional writer self-doubt and self-loathing. And so I think in terms of that character's relationship to me, it was more maybe making fun of my own insecurities, if that makes sense.
Mia, I would like to pick up on what you said about Gabby, because especially as the story progresses and Gabby really begins to rage and your performance becomes so intense and unhinged, I was wondering, would you rehearse these kinds of scenes? I'm thinking of you like in the car yelling at James. Is that something you would rehearse, where Brendan, you would like give direction, or would that be a scene where you were free to like find the energy and the moment?
Yeah, that wasn't something we rehearsed. I don't think we did any rehearsal, did we? No, it's and really that's my favorite way to work. Brandon really gave me all the freedom that I could have hoped for in my building of my character Gabby. I felt as though he cast me. He felt sure in his decision, and after that he kind of just let me go off and running, really. And he, like, to me, honestly, that's the sign of a great director, when he has that kind of level of trust in his actors. That's when the directors are really able to get really unpredictable performances. If you start micromanaging actors, I think you kind of run the risk of kind of blocking them. Mm-hmm. and their creativity. So no, that wasn't something that we rehearsed. It was something that we started on the day, and then we did it once, and then it felt right to take it, make it bigger, and we just, and then it felt right to make it bigger again, and it just, I just kept going for it. And I think it's, I would rather hear from a director, let's turn it down a little bit, as opposed to like, can we have more? It's much easier to reel it back in rather than trying to, push for feelings. You never want to push for feelings. If you start pushing for feelings, it's not really, then you're performing. You don't want that, if that makes any sense. So yeah, that wasn't something we rehearsed. It was just something that we did, and it felt right on the day.
Have you been involved also in other aspects of the story? Because you co-wrote Pearl, so did you also have influence on that story development, or was Brandon always fully in charge of it?
No, Brandon was fully in charge here, which was great. Like I said, the fact that he gave me as much freedom as he did for my development of Gabby was more than enough. I mean, that's really an actor's dream. I started with my first movie was Lars von Trier and Nymphomaniac, and he works in quite a similar way, where he has total trust in his actors, and having that as my first movie really gave me a strong sense of what it is that I want to do, with the kind of directors that I want to work with and their styles of working, and Brandon fits that beautifully.
This film is sort of, I guess you can label it as a body horror film, but also filled with a lot of sex, where I feel that sort of the sex is very much integrated in this whole kind of body horror concept. Could you, a question for both of you, what kind of role do you think the sex plays in this film?
I mean, to a certain extent, you have these characters who are engaging with this animalistic side of themselves that is repressed in civilized society, say. And so there's a violence there, and there's also a carnality to the characters. And so to me, that's part of it. Part of their vacation, in a sense, is that they're free from traditional limitations of civilized society, and they're free from traditional consequences, and that plays out in different ways, in terms of the violence, but also in terms of their sexuality.
The characters have, especially the rich ones, like this facade where they appear nice and normal and caring family people, just kind of boring even, and then they're absolutely wicked and depraved on the other side, where there are moments when you had the idea in your maybe everyday life or social interaction that just people you knew, their mask drops and you see just darkness and horror, and then they can put the mask on again and be perfectly trivial and nice.
I try not to spend too much time with that kind of person. But I think in a way it's true of everybody, I suspect. I mean, if you look at the history of human horrors, it's very often ordinary people who are put in a context where they're permitted to do horrible things or encouraged to do horrible things. And I feel like we like to imagine that in that situation we would behave differently, but I don't know that we would. I mean, it's hard to say who we would be in that situation, because so many completely normal people, so many people who in the context of civilized society behave perfectly well and perfectly ethically, historically have become monsters in the right context. And so I think, although I wouldn't say there's anything at the essence of a human being, because I think we're so plastic, because I don't think you can talk about human nature as some kind of fixed thing. Certainly we're animals, and certainly there's a kind of civility that we've imposed on ourselves socially that I think can dissipate very quickly as soon as it's permitted.
The characters have to watch themselves being executed in the movie, and if you act on violent movies, that's not so uncommon for an actor. So could you comment about the feelings of watching yourself in violent movies, and what does it do to you if you see yourself on screen in violent situations?
Well, I mean, I guess because you're a part of the making of that scene on the day, you know, you're completely aware of how laborious and technical a scene like that actually is. You know, you when you're watching the movie, you know, you're not just watching, when you're watching a film that you're a part of, you're not watching it like a ordinary audience member. You're being transported back to that time and everything that took place. And so if there's a scene with blood involved, you know, you remember all the crew working together to kind of make the scene just right, and then to add, you know, a certain amount of goop to make the blood more realistic. And you know, you remember the familial environment that we had on set, and you know, usually like what a wonderful time that you were having, and it's just you're taking in, so it's, you know, there's just so much more that you're taking into account when you're watching a scene that you're involved in, that you, not that you become desensitized to it, but it's just a kind of an awe and an appreciation at what we were able to do. And you know, it's a joint effort by everyone involved. And yeah.
I agree. You can't watch, it's different for a director, obviously, to some degree, but you can't watch a scene like that without recognizing that there was someone just off camera with a pump pushing blood through a prosthetic that you spent an hour carefully setting up, and all the times that it started dripping blood too early and you had to redo the take, and you know, it's that's completely on your mind. It's hard to see it in a neutral way.